Well, good evening, everybody. Pastor Jim is a little under the weather, so Miss Kathy wouldn't let him leave the house. So you guys are stuck with me tonight. So I want to dovetail a little bit off something Pastor Jim has been talking about in his past few sermons, and it was the idea of responsibility and taking responsibility and having responsibility, right? So tonight we're going to talk about a little bit about responsibility and your responsibility. Your responsibility. No, not your responsibility. We'll talk about Doug's responsibility then. So I'm going to start off with a little bit. If you've ever talked to me in a deep conversation, which doesn't happen very often, but I often will come around to the ideal that I don't subscribe to the old adage of everything happens for a reason or being in the right place at the right time type of frame. I believe that God has us right where He wants us at the very time He wants us for the purpose that He wants us. And we might not know that purpose right now, but we may know it 5, 10, 20 years down the road, right? When we look back at things. So, in the Bible, or when you hear sermons, sometimes you hear pastors throw out things like the terms like sheep and wolf and lion. I want to talk about three things first. And there's an old... It was an old article done by a retired army colonel. And he talked about how there was three types of people in the world. There's sheep. And sheep have no capacity for violence, right? Sheep are pretty docile. They're kind. They're gentle. Somewhat productive in their own way. And they can only really hurt each other by accident, right? And that he framed most of the people in the United States in that little section, or in that big section, I should say. They don't care much about responsibility. They just go with the flow. They follow the crowd, right? That's what sheep do. Sometimes right off a cliff, right? Sheep are known in herds to just follow each other right off the cliff. Second group are wolves. Right? Sheep are afraid of the wolves. Wolves are natural predators. Wolves are mean-spirited and aggressive for the most part, right? And they feed on sheep without mercy. They have no regard for how the sheep feels or anything like that. They definitely have a capacity for violence, and they have no empathy. And that's a small section of people in the world, the wolves. And you can also look at it in a spiritual sense of Satan as a wolf, right? Or people that are evil, things that are evil in this world are wolves. And then he grafts one more group of people. And those people are the sheepdogs. Sheepdogs live to protect the flock. They have a purpose. They also live to confront the wolf. They have a capacity for violence, but they also have a deep love for those that they are supposed to protect, the sheep, right? So they're kind of the middle ground between everything. And I think if we're going to look at this in the capacity of putting ourselves into a category, the sheepdogs are the Christians in the world, right? We have a capacity to confront those. It's been given to us, right? But we also have a sense of love for those around us. So we have a capacity for violence when needed. Sergeant York. Has anyone ever heard of Sergeant York? Alvin York? More heads nodding than I thought there would, really. Although, for those of you who don't know, Alvin York, that guy up there, Tracy, who did some research on Google real quick, apparently. Alvin York was born in the foothills of Tennessee. He was a conscientious objector, which means he didn't want to fight anybody. He had no reason to, didn't want to. But Alvin York was drafted into the Army. And after he finished his training, he was put in the 82nd Airborne. He became a paratrooper. And Alvin York was a Christian, and he had a lot of convictions. That was part of the reason why he was a conscientious objector. He didn't want to ever have to kill somebody or fight. It was against his what he believed was his morals. So when he finally got to his unit, he told his commander, Captain Danforth, that he would bear arms against the enemy, but he didn't want to kill him. He didn't want to fight. Well, as a company commander, this can be very troublesome. You have a soldier who says he'll do what he said, what he's supposed to do, but at the same time he won't. So he went, what any good commander would do, he went to his commander, the battalion commander, Major Buxton, that's who it was. And Major Buxton, he was a Christian as well. And he felt like him and Private York at the time had a connection. They had something that they could have in common, and they could have a deep discussion. And so that's what the battalion commander did, which is not normal, for those of you who've never been in the military, for a high-ranking officer to talk to a private. That's not normal in military culture, that is. So they had this discussion, and at the end of it, Major Buxton decided to put Private York on leave. And he told him to go home and think about his convictions, think about what he knew about God and the Bible, about just fighting, things of that nature. And he promised him if he came back with the same convictions, that he'd just let him out of the army. And this is right during, this is during World War I. We had a draft going on, right? Couldn't just let people go. That's why we had a draft. We had to pull people in, right? So this battalion commander told Alvin York, if he was really that convicted, that he would let him go. So for 2 weeks, he did some soul searching, some praying. And at the end of that 2 weeks, Alvin York came back and he said he would fight for his country. Today we're going to talk about a man who was called by God to fight for his country. Okay, and he was not necessarily the one that had a propensity for fighting. He thought of himself as the lowliest of lows, actually, in his family. Tonight we're going to be talking about Gideon. So if you would, turn to the book of Judges in chapter 7 is where we'll start. So the book of Heroes, Judges. The Hebrew word for judge actually has two meanings. It could mean a ruler or a military leader, as well as someone who presided over a legal hearing, right? The main body of the book, from chapters 3, verse 7 through chapter 16, give actual accounts, historical accounts, of the nation of Israel and their judges, and they have a reoccurring cycle. It goes something like apostasy, oppression, distress, and deliverance. And it goes through this cycle over and over and over again. Chapter 3, verse 7 starts with, "The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord." And then in verse 11 comes to a recognizable conclusion that we see over and over again in the book. the land had peace for years, or so-and-so led Israel for years, and so on, right? Judges highlights 13 separate heroes in the history of the Jews. 12 men and one woman. So let's read from Judges chapter 7. Early in the morning, Gideon and all of his men camped at the spring of Herod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley, near the hill of Morah. The Lord said to Gideon, "You have too many men for me to deliver Midian into their hands. In order that Israel may not boast against me, that her own strength has saved her. Announce now to the people, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead." So 22,000 men left, while 10,000 remained. Now we're about halfway into the story of Gideon. It actually starts back in chapter 6, where he tells God, "I'm not the right guy. You got the wrong guy. I'm not the guy for this." He tells him more than once, "I'm not the right guy for this." And God says, "Yes, you are." And he says, "Well, what if I do this and you do this, then I'll know I'm the right guy." And then he says, "Well, if I do this and this," you know what I'm saying? He tries to get out of it, basically. So he's sort of like Sergeant York, or Private York at the time. He didn't want to fight. He didn't want to lead God's army. He didn't feel he was called to do it. So a little bit about Alvin York, a little bit more about him. On October 8th of 1918, in France, Alvin York was now a corporal, earning his stripes through various battles that he had been involved in. So that morning, Corporal York's battalion was moving across the valley, and at the same time, when his unit was moving across the valley, they were ambushed by some German machine guns that had been hiding out in the forest, right? So they dived for cover, and they did what they could to stall the attack. But even at the time, Corporal York's platoon, which is typically 20 to 30 men, had been reduced in half, basically, to 16 men. So his platoon, already at 16 men, was already smaller than it should be to fight the enemy. So as the attack ensued, his platoon was charged with taking out the machine guns, flanking the enemy and taking out the machine guns. So as the platoon advanced through the woods, they were surprised by another group, 25 German soldiers. But they only offered a little bit of resistance, and eventually they ended up surrendering to Corporal York's platoon. But soon after that, they were attacked, and 9 out of the 16 men in his platoon were either killed or injured. So now he's down to 7 men. And even amongst those 7 men, Corporal York ended up being the only one not injured. So now you have a corporal who has 25 prisoners that had just surrendered to him, and a whole group of his fellow soldiers that are injured that he has to lead. I tell you all this to ask you the question, have you ever been in a situation where you didn't feel equipped or you felt inadequate? Either by what you had at your disposal, or what you had been taken from you, or your stature in society, whatever the case may be. Back in chapter 6 of Judges, verse 15, Gideon tells God, "But Lord," Gideon asked, "how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least of my family." Gideon felt inadequate. He didn't feel equipped. He didn't feel like he had what it took to lead God's army against the Midianites, who were a formidable force. Okay, they had oppressed the Israelites up until this point. They were mean men. Gideon was a simple farm boy in his mind, but yet God saw him as a mighty warrior. God saw him totally different, right? So how do you see yourself in your day-to-day life? Do you see yourself as inadequate? Do you see yourself as small in stature? Take that thought and then think about how God sees you. God sees each and every one of you in a different light than you probably see yourself. He sees great potential in every person, right? Just so you know how big of a force Gideon was up against, in actually the next chapter, chapter 8, verse 10, it tells of three leaders of the Midianites that were left. And they were left with a force of about 15,000 after the big battle had taken place. So we had three men left with 15,000. And it says 120,000 had fallen. So Gideon and the Israelites were up against a force of 135,000 men. And we just read, right? How many men did he have left after he sent some away? Not yet. He had 10,000. He still had 10,000 at his disposal. So, prior to this, he had had about 32,000 men at his disposal prior to this. And so the odds were about 4-1, right, against him. So they had 135,000 against 30,000, about 4-1 odds. Just for a little retrospective, the United States military, the Army in general, I know because I was in the Army, they won't even attack a target unless they have a 3-1 ratio in our favor. So you're talking about, in order for the Army to attack a small group of men of 10, you're going to send in a whole company of, or a whole platoon of 30 guys. You're going to have a 3-1 ratio. Gideon's was already flip-flop from the beginning. It was 4-1 against him. Then God tells him, you got too many men. So he sends away 22,000 of them, right? He's got 10,000 left. Anyone want to do some quick math? No? Dennis said no. So now the odds are 13-1 against him. 13 Midianites to 1 Israelite, right? So let's read on in verse 4. But the Lord said to Gideon, there are still too many men. Take them down to the water, and I will sift them out. Sift them for you there. If I say this one shall go with you, he shall go. But if I say this one shall not go with you, he shall not go. So Gideon took the men down to the water, and there the Lord told him, separate those who lap the water with their tongues like a dog from those who kneel down to drink. 300 men lapped with their hands to their mouth, and all the rest got down on their knees and drank to drink. The Lord said to Gideon, with the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the other men go, each to his own place. So Gideon sent the rest of the Israelites to their tents, but he kept 300 who took over the provisions and the trumpets of the others. And I'm going to stop right there real quick. So 13-1, right? It was already 13-1. Odds are not looking good for Gideon, who didn't want to do this from the beginning, right? And now God says, well, God says, you got too many guys. So he sends a bunch away. You still got too many guys, Gideon. You got to be thinking, well, me and my brain, I would be thinking, God, are you kidding me? I have too many men. I need to send some away. So, militarily, this just is, it doesn't even make any sense. You got a leader who doesn't want to lead, and you got a fighting force that's just minuscule, right? So back to Corporal York. Corporal York found his platoon, again, trapped under enemy fire after he went through this whole ordeal. He had 25 prisoners, a bunch of his own men wounded and injured. Nonetheless, Corporal York didn't panic. Instead, he began firing at the nearest positions. Aware that the Germans would have to expose themselves at some point to get an aim shot at him. So as they popped up, Corporal York, who grew up in the foothills of Tennessee, hunting squirrels and things of that nature, started picking them off one by one. Ping, 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 right? Anyone who popped up their head, he took them out. God didn't choose these 300 men by accident. We see some of them got down on their knees and drank the water up like dogs. Yet 300 men took water and brought it up to their faces, right? From a military standpoint, those were the smart guys. They kept their eyes always focused on what was in front of them rather than giving themselves up, right? So God was very particular, very meticulous at weeding down to these 300 men who were the best fighters that Gideon could have at his disposal. I think it's funny that he took men who acted literally like dogs and got rid of them. So God finally had Israel's army where he wanted it, right? I've whittled them down. I've picked the best men. Here you go, Gideon. Here's 300 dudes to go fight 132,000 or 135,000, right? There you go. Go get them, big guy. Doug, did you do the math? 31, the ratio is about 450-1. Tim figured it out for us. So 450-1. How many of you would want to take in, now basically in today's military, that's about a battalion against basically a whole army? I would be scared. So Gideon's still not sure, right? So in verse 9, we see, during that night, the Lord said to Gideon, get up, go down against the camp, because I am going to give it into your hands. If you are afraid to attack, go down to the camp with your servant, Purah, and listen to what they are saying. Afterward, you will be encouraged to attack the camp. So he and Purah, his servant, went down to the outposts of the camp. The Midianites and the Amalekites and all the other eastern peoples had settled in the valley, thick as locusts. Their camels could no more be counted than the sand on the seashore. First of all, that takes a lot of guts to go down there. Two men go down there to see what's going on, right? To scout it out. So Gideon arrived just as a man was telling his friend about his dream. I had a dream, he was saying. A round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. It struck the tent with such force that the tent was overturned and collapsed. His friend responded, this can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon, son of Joash, the Israelite. God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands. And when Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he worshipped God. He returned to the camp of Israel and called out, "Get up. The Lord has given the Midianite camp into our hands." So God says to Gideon, "All right, if you're still a little worried, you're still a little shaky, you don't think I got you in my hand, you don't think I got this under control, go ahead and take your buddy, take your servant, and go down and do a little recon," right? Any good army, any good military is always going to do a little recon on their target before they attack it. So God says, "Go ahead. Go on down there and see what's going on." Like I said, this has got to be an intimidating situation, first of all, to sneak down into this massive camp where there's probably tents right next to each other, camels, all these men. Got to be intimidating, right? Camels as thick as a locust. That's a lot. It's a lot of camels. So anyone in this situation obviously would like to have more men at their disposal, right? A group of 300 men isn't exactly a bunch of locusts when you think about a battle. But God decided, "All right, Gideon, after in chapter 6 you said, 'Well, God, if I throw this fleece on the ground and all the ground around it is wet, but the fleece stays dry, I'll believe you.'" And he says, and God does it. And he says, "Well, okay, God, what if I throw this fleece down on the ground again and only the fleece gets wet and the ground around it stays dry? Then I'll do what you tell me to do," right? So God does these things for Gideon. He's still a little shaky, but God says, "You know what? One more chance, Gideon. If you need just that one last attaboy, I got your back. Go on down there and have a listen. See what you can find out," right? So he listens to the dream and the interpretation. And the Midianite soldier talks about, "I see a loaf of barley," right? And the loaf of barley was a commoner's loaf of bread. There was nothing special about it, right? So God gave this dream to the Midianites, but he presents Gideon not as a mightier warrior rolling through their camp and destroying them all, right? It's just a common man. He says, "You're going to be destroyed by a common man. He's going to come in, not a sword, not a rock, a loaf of bread. He's going to come in and take out your whole nation." I'll say it again. Have you ever felt insignificant? Have you ever felt like a loaf of bread in a battle? Maybe you're lucky enough to feel like one of those French bread loaves that's really long. It looks like a sword, right? Not quite a rock. Definitely not a sword. A loaf of bread. Felt like you couldn't make a difference. Felt like you weren't equipped to teach, to lead, to make a difference. The difference is, God sees us in a whole different light, like I said. He doesn't see us as a loaf of bread. He looks at the heart, and he looks at your abilities that he's given you. And he puts you in situations to use those abilities, to use those talents that he's given you, right? It may be something simple, like blessing somebody by mowing their lawn, or helping them move, just by blessing somebody. You can make a difference in somebody's life, even if you feel insignificant. At the same time, going back to Gideon and him hearing the story, hearing the dream, Gideon would have known that a loaf of barley bread was nothing special, right? Gideon knew his place. But rather than getting offended that God showed him to the Midianites as a loaf of bread, what did he do? He fell down and he worshiped God, right? He thanked God for what he was about to do. He wasn't offended by what other people saw him as, but rather he felt power in what he knew was about to happen. He finally embraced his destiny, right? So in verse 16, I need to get one of those big print Bibles like Tracy has, because I forgot my glasses. So in verse 16, dividing the 300 men into three companies, he placed trumpets and empty jars in the hands of all of them with torches inside. "Watch me," he told them. "Follow my lead. When I get to the edge of the camp, do exactly as I do. When I and all who are with me blow our trumpets, from all around the camp, blow yours and shout for the Lord and for Gideon." Gideon and the 100 men with him reached the edge of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just as they had changed over the guard. They blew their trumpets, broke the jars that were in their hands. Three companies blew their trumpets and smashed the jars, grasping the torches in their left hands and holding in their right hands trumpets they were to blow. They shouted, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." So, something just jumped out at me. And it's funny to think of these men who are about to go into battle, 300 of them. About to fight a very formidable force of over 100,000 men. The interesting thing about it was, God had a plan, right? And in those times, certain things symbolized things, right? And it was the custom back then that behind every torch, generally, was about 1,000 men. So you see 300 torches, you think 300,000 men, right? Another part that made this so, what jumped out at me that was interesting is this happened during the changeover of the watch. And I can tell you from being a young soldier in the Army when I was younger and stupid, when you get stuck, when you're the youngest guy, you usually get stuck on the worst shifts. And you get stuck on the shift that's at 3 a.m., or 4 a.m., you know? And so you've been sleeping for 2 hours maybe, and then you have to wake up for an hour, and then you have to try to go back to sleep. So you've been sleeping for maybe 2 hours if you're lucky, after you've finished everything you're going to do for the night. They wake you up, you get stuck on guard duty, and you're not coherent. You're not thinking clearly, especially as soon as your watch starts, because you're still waking up. You generally don't wake up until your watch is almost over. And then you can't fall back asleep. So that's how they get the young guys. So they're switching over. And all of a sudden, 300 pots smash on the ground. So already there's confusion. And then 300 torches go up. And this guy that's half awake, I'm sure, is thinking, uh-oh. I don't know if he counted to 300 really fast, but he probably saw a bunch of torches, thinking there's 1,000 men behind each one of those torches. We're in trouble. So, God took these 300 torches and turned it into a 2-to-1 ratio in favor of Gideon. Flip-flop the odds.
So he used fear.
God doesn't do anything by accident, and he doesn't put us where we are, when we are, ever by accident. God whittled down a fighting force, the 300 men, which appeared to be 300,000 men. God has a plan. So back to Alvin York. And we'll round it out with Alvin York a little bit here, so that way I don't leave you hanging about what happened to good old Alvin York, for those of you who don't know. So during all this commotion going on, right, they'd been ambushed, he'd lost some men, taken some prisoners, he's being shot at again, and he's the only one that can really do anything back. So Alvin York stayed calm. And after he'd shot more than a dozen enemy, six German soldiers decided to charge at him with their bayonets fixed. And for those of you who don't know, that's when they stick that nice little knife on the end of their rifles and they come running at you hoping to stab you. They fixed their bayonets and they figured, surely six of us can take out this one guy. Alvin York drew back on his foothill smarts and he started to pick them off from the furthest one back and forward so that they wouldn't see each other fall and wouldn't get scared. So he killed off six more, right? After he had shot all those assaulting Germans, he turned his attention to the remaining machine gun pits. And what at first had seemed ludicrous, that one man could take on all these things, right? All these different fighting forces. After the battalion commander from the Germans had seen what was going on, he advanced and offered a surrender to Corporal York. Only, though, if Corporal York would stop shooting. So he was looking to save whatever he had left of his fighting force. Corporal York faced a daunting task now, even more than he had, right? So now his platoon was numbering about seven soldiers. They were isolated behind enemy lines still. And he had all these prisoners. He had to organize all these prisoners, and he had to get his platoon and these people back across enemy lines, back to where it was safe. Along the way, he encountered more German positions, and he made them surrender. He eventually cleared out the valley, and subsequently was able to get to where he needed to be. He faced a daunting task, but God brought him through it, right? This young man who had initially refused to fight, just like Gideon. He wanted nothing to do with it. But God brought him through it. God put him in that unit and in that place for a reason, right? So while each man held his position around the camp, all the Midianites ran around crying out as they fled. When 300 trumpets sounded, the Lord caused the men throughout the camp to turn on each other with their swords. The army fled to Beth towards Zariah as far as the border of Abel near Tabith. Israelites from Naphtali, Asher, and all Manasseh were called out, and they pursued the Midianites. Gideon sent messengers throughout the hill country of Ephraim, saying, "Come down against the Midianites and seize the waters of the Jordan ahead of them, as far as Beth Barah." So all the men of Ephraim were called out, and they took the waters of the Jordan as far as Beth Barah. They also captured two of the Midianite leaders, Orb and Zeb. They killed Oreb at the rock of Oreb and Zeb at the winepress of Zeb. They pursued the Midianites and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon, who was by the Jordan. The end of Corporal York's story is that by the end of all this that happened on that day, in October of 1918, he had a total of 132 prisoners. He took out 35 machine gun pits. He ended up leaving all the prisoners with the closest American unit, and then he returned back to his unit that he had been separated from. And all this was actually not told by Alvin York. He's not the one that brought this story up or, you know, brought this story to light. The intelligence officers that interrogated the prisoners were the ones that learned about all this. Their testimonies, an incredible story of how a fighting battalion was destroyed by a single man. One determined man with a rifle and a pistol. Alvin York was eventually promoted to sergeant, named Sergeant York, and he was awarded the Medal of Honor for his bravery, right? This man who, like I said, wanted nothing to do with it, ended up with the highest award that our nation can bestow on a soldier. Are you ever afraid to take on a task or an enemy because your numbers are too small? God puts us in situations, like Jim says, I've heard him say numerous times over the past few months. He puts you in a situation so that you can be a shepherd to a flock. So you can be that sheepdog for those lost sheep. One amongst many, right? Oftentimes we find ourselves out there in the world, in the workplace, amongst friends, maybe amongst family members, and we feel outnumbered. But God doesn't put us in those situations by accident. God didn't put us in the families we're in by accident. God didn't give us the friends He did by accident. God didn't give us the jobs we have by accident. As a Christian, it's your responsibility as a sheepdog to herd those sheep in and keep them safe and bring them in, right? That's our job. That's our responsibility. God doesn't need a big army. Okay, God only needed 300 men to destroy 130-some thousand, right? God only needed one man to take out a whole German battalion. All He needs is a willing servant, right? That's all He needs from us. And for us as the willing servants and the disciples to trust in His will for us. Will you pray with me? Father, I just thank You for this time. Thank You for Your word. Thank You for the opportunities that You bring before us every day. And sometimes we don't even know they're coming. Often the greatest blessings that we can have are those opportunities that spring up on us that we don't plan for, but You put us in those positions. And You give us that responsibility on our shoulders to be the salt and light of this world. Father, I just pray that for each and every person here, You would give them the boldness, the courage, whatever's needed, the word in that time and in those situations, that You would just guard our minds and our hearts and keep us focused on You and Your plan for us. I just want to pray for Pastor Jim as well, Father, that You would watch over him, watch over his family. Father, heal him and bring him back to us healthy on Sunday. I ask that You would watch over each and every one of us as we prepare to drive home in the upcoming storm, that we would stay warm and that we would be thankful for the blessings of the shelter that we have. And also remember those that don't have as much as we do, Father, and just pray for them. I ask all these things in your name. Amen.
Turn my eyes to see.